Backseat Producers, episode 199, World's Greatest Dad.
This is Tony.
And this is Daryl.
And this is Sam.
We are the Backseat Producers. And we are now...
just hours away.
Literally, it is now 10 p.m., so that means we are exactly 72 hours from Sausage Fest.
Yes.
Oh, just...
Mere hours and counting down. Tick, tick, tick.
So by the time you listen to this, some of us may be dead.
Yep.
Or at least severely injured. Or still hungover.
We may have had some liver transplants involved.
Mm-hmm.
It could happen.
It's not a good Archon unless there's at least one ambulance call.
Yeah.
I foresee it being
breastectomy on me. The get me really wasted Friday so that early Saturday morning get me into a plastic surgeon to get a real pair of fake tits put on me, as weird as that sounds, failed, and I bled out on the table. So
either that or Stingray falls out of the window into a bush.
What's that?
Either that or Stingray falls out of a window into a bush. It could happen. So, you know what? By the time anybody listens to this, Archon will be over. Sausage Fest will be over. But Sausage Fest West will still be happening.
Where is that at?
Sacramento.
Okay, a bit of a long drive from me then.
It is a bit, yeah. It's actually Lachlan Rich Flynn. It's his birthday party.
Oh, right on.
He is donating his birthday party to Sausage Fest. And it has become Sausage Fest West. Amazingly enough, I've been able to say that correctly every time I've said it.
Amazing.
All right, so tonight we're going to talk about something that is about as far removed from Sausage Fest as I think we're going to be able to get.
But it's still it's just as funny.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's kind of funny.
Kind of funny. So we're talking about World's Greatest Dad,
mm-hmm.
the Robin Williams flick. Actually, the Bobcat Goldthwait flick.
Right, since he wrote, directed, and acted in it.
So I thought, okay, I've heard a little bit about this movie. And I look up, I pull it up on Netflix, written and directed by Bobcat Goldthwait. I'm like, son of a bitch. The last movie I watched that this guy did was Shakes the Clown.
Yep. His classic.
Mimes.
Which also had Robin Williams in it.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, he is in it as the mime class teacher.
Yes.
All right, so Sam, what did you think? High level.
Okay. So I am of two minds with this movie. On one hand, dark comedy, and I love dark comedies. I love Fight Club. It's dark comedies, edgy comedy is great, and I like that. And it was going for that, and it succeeded at some parts. On the other hand, I think that, and I'll get to this when we get into the real big plot deconstruction. But I think this movie had so much potential, and then in the last 15 minutes, failed.
Hmm. Interesting. Daryl.
Wow. Yep, dark comedy, satire. I mean, this thing just goes right for the throat in trying to satirize all this.
Literally,
it goes for the, it crushes your throat, yes. No boner about it.
Wouldn't you say it chokes you?
Yes.
With the point?
No, it choked at the last, but...
it did. Yeah, this movie did choke at the end.
But I liked it quite a bit. I mean, there were points where it seemed like it would never get to the satire part. I mean, the whole first part of the movie was just setting up, you know, what a douchebag this kid is.
Yeah.
And whatnot. And I didn't see how. Well, they kind of also kind of hinted about, you know, how he was going to meet his end.
Yeah, it was a little bit of foreshadowing. Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
They teased it.
They teased it, well, telegraphed it, teased it, whatever you want to call it. But when they actually got into when he gets into the actual trying to salvage his kid's reputation and how everybody just, like, falls all over it, that's when it got interesting.
I like how that's your high level.
All right, so my high level overview. I didn't know what to think of this movie when I first started watching it, and it does have a very slow lead-in. There's a point where it gets almost touching in this really bizarre way, and then it quickly turns into a satire along the lines of Jennifer's Body or Heather's, where it's just commentary on the way teenagers...
Well, it's not so much teenagers, just the way we...
Or communities, actually.
Communities, how communities grieve.
Yeah.
Well, there's no real grieving here. I mean, they're all just a bunch of terrible wannabes.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't really know this guy or even like him, and all of a sudden, he was this poet warrior.
Well, it's more a satire on the way people latch on to an event, mm-hmm. and make it about
make it
them.
Them, yes. They pour themselves into it.
Right. One of the things that we've often joked about in my family when we watch the news and such, whenever there's some news story, mm-hmm. they always have to have, because we're from the St. Louis area, they have the St. Louis angle. Mm-hmm. There's always some, and this is why it's important to St. Louis, you know. I saw things, there was an actress who recently got kicked off an airline for kissing her girlfriend or some such.
George Takei's response to that was awesome.
I didn't actually see that, but I saw the news in national news like a day or two ago, but today I was seeing tweets from the local news. On a St. Louis-bound flight, this happened. It's like, wow, really? That's your lead-in? It was always, on a flight bound to St. Louis, and then the story.
Well, it just gives you another example of just even more relevant. Look at the swirl around Michael Jackson's death. I mean, this guy was a joke. This guy was a total joke up until the time he died, and then all of a sudden, he's like a musical. He has a second musical genius career.
Well, it's there's the joke that painters aren't famous, mm-hmm. until they kill themselves,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Right, or they die tragically. It's not like, oh, you know, he died of old age. Now his paintings are so poignant. No one cares. It's only if the guy is like hit by a bus or eaten by a chupacabra. You know, it's things like that that all of a sudden, oh, do you have a Swiss Thompson painting? Do you have one of those? Oh, he was so unappreciated, and it's gross. I mean, it's
Kurt Cobain.
I've never really been into Nirvana, and he died like when I was young, and so, right, well, so I was like, does everyone like this music?
I was into Nevermind, the album Nevermind. Owned it when it came out, thought it was great, really enjoyed it. I thought it was a good album. I thought the music was good, but I never had this messiah-like worship for this guy, because I didn't think he was that great. I mean, every news article about him at the time was that he despised the industry, he despised his fame and fortune, and it's like, mm-hmm. wow, you're just a douchebag. That's all you are. You have everything every person from our generation wants, and you're pissing on it. Congratulations.
And he was the first modern hipster.
Yeah.
I'm famous. But I don't like being famous, and you shouldn't like me because I'm famous.
Yeah, I got famous.
You're a hipster douche.
I got famous by writing a song about how fame is terrible.
Ugh.
Wow.
Oh, God, it's giving me the skeevies now. Yeah.
So, anyway, this movie has a lot of that vibe to it. And that's the kind of mentality that it's parodying. I think that's how it's
satirizing.
Close enough.
Yep.
Close enough. Archon, Sausage Fest, Obfuscate. All right. So acting, I'm gonna go ahead and throw it first. Have you ever seen Spy Kids?
No.
Okay, so anybody who's listening, think for a moment if you've ever seen the movie Spy Kids. Think about the young boy who was the because it was the boy and girl, and he was the younger of the two. The yep. boy from Spy Kids, that's the kid in this movie.
Yeah.
And that threw me off. It was like, whoa. Because I had watched this movie first, and just like a week or two ago, we let Holden pick a movie on Netflix, and Spy Kids was on. We're like, okay, family movie night. We've never seen it. Pop some corn and sit down and watch the movie. And we're watching this movie, and I was like, wow, I know that kid. Holy crap, that's that guy.
I know what you're going to do in another movie, yeah. And it is definitely not related to spies or kids.
No. So, I actually thought his performance was barely passable. I didn't actually care for his performance. It just seemed a little bit too over the top, which was kind of who he was. So, I mean, in a way, it's either that was good acting or he's not a good actor and they just threw him in that role because his overacting was really what that person called for.
Well, if you're trying to shed an image, wouldn't you want to try to own that role that way to kind of get rid of your goody two shoes type image?
I'm not even talking about what it was about, the subject matter. I'm not talking about the subject matter at all. It was just he just seemed every time he talked about that stuff because he was into. I mean, we don't do the spoiler thing anymore, but so he was into. Insulting people, insulting women sexually, internet porn.
Hard.
He was a man who had. Well, he was a kid who had zero personality, and what little he had, he just was scorned on everybody else.
Right. It was all about.
He hated everybody else because everybody else hated him.
Well, but the thing is, though, he knows what he likes, right? Because obviously he goes after it. But Andrew says it really best. He was kind of dumb.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Like, he had no subtle.
He's just an idiot who can't express why he likes what he likes, and so he's just kind of a moron out to try and find his place in the world because he doesn't know any other way.
Plus he's like the epitome of internet troll.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
I'm gonna make everybody else feel bad so that Because I feel bad. And if I can make you feel bad, that means I'm better than you because I can bring you down to my level. I mean, it's this weird
dynamic. Yes.
That weird griefer mentality about it.
Hey, some men just want to watch the world burn.
That's true, and he just wanted to watch the world felch.
Yep, or some other verb that is
in poor taste.
Screwing in the butt. I don't know. I got nothing.
I thought Robin Williams was fantastic in the role he played.
See, on one hand, yes, but on the other hand, I'm not so sure. Like, the character, and maybe it was the writing, but the character is a little inconsistent from the start to the end. And that bothered me. And it's just because as soon as the big, happens at the end, part of it was not really buying what was going on, and then it was not buying him.
The end was odd.
Although I can see why Adam would like part of the end.
Well,
penises are funny.
Yeah,
just saying. But
I didn't get that from Williams. I thought he handled this really well. I mean, compared to what he was doing in One Hour Photo and in Garp, I think he kind of really matured as a dramatic actor. He was balancing that drama and the comedy.
Yeah, see,
and that's kind of hard for him because he's a guy who works best when he ad libs.
Yeah, So Sam hasn't been involved in the conversations about World According to Garp and 1 Hour Photo, our last two movies that we've talked about. So we've kind of been doing this progression of Robin Williams through his career.
Okay.
In what we saw in Garp, he so badly wanted to have fun and to ad lib and to crack up and to
he was holding himself back enormously.
Yeah, and it was obvious. There were scenes where it was like you could tell he threw in one liners and turns of phrase and deliveries that were like out of place for the character, but perfectly normal for Robin Williams, the stand-up comedian.
Mm-hmm.
1 Hour Photo, that was just about him being the creeper.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a subpar story.
Well, this way, it was a thin story. There could have been more to it.
Right.
But I think he did fairly well coming off as creeper. I mean,
he did come off of creeper.
He played that really well. He did. He made me squirm through all that movie.
But I think this
just didn't live up to its entire premise.
Right. I think this movie balanced it a lot better. It let Robin Williams have some comedy, some comedic moments.
Mm-hmm. It is a satire, so you've got to have some comic relief in a tragedy.
Right. But with this one, I think it showcased how much he's grown as an actor.
Right.
Especially from the last two movies.
Well, Garp was 82, 1 Hour Photo was 2003, this one's 2005.
Nine.
So he's made some huge progress there.
Yeah.
See, but I guess part of it was that I despised his character for a good portion of the movie.
Oh yeah, like, he's the man's a total doormat.
Until his son ganks himself, I was like, wow, I cannot stand this character. Mm-hmm. Because he is, and this is a problem that my mother is a teacher, and she runs into this all the time. There are parents who are afraid to parent.
Mm-hmm.
And that is exactly what is wrong with him.
Well, yeah, the man's a doormat.
For the movie.
Right. I don't disagree. I think that's part of the character, though. And I think it's an interesting dichotomy that he is a teacher, but as a parent, he's...
pretty much a failure.
He's a failure.
He sucks, a
failure.
But at the same time, though... a child like that is
a challenge.
A challenge is more than that. It's a child like that is a hazard to people's health.
Yeah.
To be completely honest, the way in which he treats the people in his life is abusive.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just mean; it's flat out abusive. And part of me is like, wow. Andrew is already a damaged enough kid, and this is his best friend? I feel so sorry for that kid, and he's a minor role.
Andrew is a perfect case of Stockholm Syndrome. I mean, he's glommed onto this guy, even though he treats him like crap. He at least pays attention to him.
It makes
sense. I mean,
that's
a classic codependent relationship.
Codependent with abandonment issues, mm-hmm. big time.
Right, and it makes perfect sense for that character to go from having an abusive mother to have an abusive friend. Because that's the way he knows love, and he knows companionship, and he knows affection. So when someone's abusive to him, that equates in his mind, maybe he would never come out and say it, but that would equate to a positive experience as someone who cares about him because they're treating him like crap.
But why is he so respectful then? Like, why does he not? Why does Andrew not lash out? I guess that's what I'm curious about. But
Andrew apparently has enough. I don't say moral sense or
survival instincts
that he's not going to attack another adult that he really doesn't know. I mean, he can watch his. He often in the movie he's questioning Kyle as, you know, why do you treat him like that? I mean, he's doing everything for you, and you still treat him horribly.
And later in the film, he does play the role of the voice of the audience.
Mm-hmm. The voice of reason. the only person who's standing outside this whole thing watching.
And he can see mm-hmm. just how terrible every bit of it is. Mm-hmm. And how dishonest everyone is.
Well, yeah, because they're putting this guy up on a pedestal that, you know, they wouldn't have flushed down the toilet a week ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, he gets beat up by the nerdy kid
mm-hmm.
who has a hot girlfriend. How does that work, really?
Fantasy. It's all fiction.
I guess. It's all in his head.
Sci-fi. This is sci-fi. Didn't you know that? So, all right. The rest of the acting was... I mean, realistically, Andrew had to come off believable. And considering the role, I believed it.
Oh, yeah. There wasn't much to it. Be monotone, be polite, swear once for intended effect,
right.
Leave.
And everything else was all pretty much passable. I mean, the acting around...
Well, they're stock performances. I mean, they're just there to support the main actors.
Right. I think the only one that I appreciated for the subtlety was the grief counselor, mm-hmm. counselor when he came in. Just because he did some things that were just... He had some weird tics that were just kind of interesting to watch. But
I didn't pick up on any of that. What did you see as his tics?
I don't know. He had this way about him that he would try to insinuate himself into things. And it's the nature of, I guess, being a grief counselor that you are an outsider coming into the situation, and he's just trying to be everybody's buddy.
Well, yeah,
and he's trying, the way he did that.
Well, he's trying to get you to come in and unload on him.
Right. I think his performance was the only one that wasn't quite a stock performance that took a little more talent to pull off that little bit of subtlety, because the rest of the performances really weren't all that subtle. They're all pretty much straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
So, the story itself, we've talked around it enough. So, Kyle, Robin Williams' son,
mm-hmm. is a douche face.
He is an ass bag, douche face, dickhead, jizz bucket. He is
literally.
Yeah, he is just a terrible, terrible human being, and thrives at being such.
And making everybody else miserable, too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Most of all, his father.
He is a font of suffering.
Yeah. Yeah, and if he can make his dad feel bad for breathing, his day is improved 100%.
And his dad, Lance, who's played by Robin Williams, is doing everything he can to connect with this kid and trying to hold on to whatever relationship he's got.
Even as at a the single point, dad, too.
Yeah. And he's doing, like you say, he's trying too hard.
Yeah, he's a teacher at the same school that Kyle goes to. Kyle is apparently a terrible student. He's a terrible human being to all the students around him. He gets in trouble regularly.
By picking fights with everybody.
Yeah, he's a known quantity because he is a teacher's child and because he's an asshole.
Yeah.
And he tries to do things to basically...
Incite people.
Well, he tries to incite people. He's about inciting chaos and self-gratification. And those are his motivations.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the only motivations he shows this movie.
And he's skill at.
But I think he does that, but he never wants to face what will really come his way. Because... When he does do the one incredibly vulgar thing that is kind of the set piece of, okay, this is commonplace with this guy.
Right.
Right. Somebody calls him on it right there, and he panics. Absolute deer in headlights. And so he's totally used to being ignored, or he just doesn't want to be heard, because he kind of says it half-ass under his breath.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets called on it by the nerd guy, and... The only way he can face up to it is to basically sucker punch the guy and still gets his ass handed to him.
Yep.
So not only is he not well-liked, not very smart, but he is physically inept.
Yes.
Which is not a good combo.
No. Yes, you might say his mouth writes checks his body can't cash.
Yes.
Literally. Literally.
As opposed to figuratively.
So then he gets, well, he gets caught at school mouthing off. Then he gets caught at home jerking off a couple of times.
But not in the conventional sense.
Well,
oh, God damn, that was funny when when Lance tells the neighbor, "Hey, I think you should shut your blinds." Why? I think my son watches you undress.
And yeah, and she doesn't know whether to act insulted or relieved.
Flattered.
Flattered, yes. Yes.
Oh, then it's the sultry unzip, the sultry look, mm-hmm. and then fuck you.
That finger. Yeah, so he gets busted there. He gets busted in autoerotic asphyxiation.
Right.
Yeah. Almost choked out.
Yeah. It's all about self-gratification for him.
Yep.
It's whatever he can do to get off.
To damn the consequences.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's looking for more and more extreme ways of doing it so that he can throw it in people's faces. He does things on purpose to get caught. He does things like jerking off with his door wide open. I mean, come on. That's like rule number one. Make sure your door has a lock on it.
Don't be obvious.
That's the start.
Yeah. It's timing, and the thing is he can hear his dad get home in that little house.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you know, they practically on top of each other.
It's more a way for him to call attention to himself.
Which is so weird because his dad wants to be a part of his life.
Right. But his dad is the complete opposite of him. He's a guy who flies totally under the radar. He wants to be noticed as a writer. He wants to be noticed as a decent teacher, but he can't.
But it's not for a lack of
trying.
He wants to be noticed as a writer, as a teacher, as a boyfriend, as a father, as a good neighbor,
yes.
too. I mean, he strives for being
calmness.
For recognition.
Well, strives for recognition without being overt. The problem is he's too under the radar for all of it.
His problem is that he didn't become a podcaster.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, he had no voice.
If he were a podcaster, he would get recognition.
Mm-hmm.
Big pimpin'.
Mm-hmm. And big money.
That's right.
Just saying. Hey, big pimpin' on BSP.
All right, so Lance has his girlfriend who is another teacher, and they have
an on and off relationship.
And, yeah, a bizarre relationship.
Well, she's the one who's more bizarre. He's trying to have something stable, and she keeps just bouncing around between him and every other guy who seems to be semi-successful.
See, I don't think it's that. Like, I think she's honestly interested in him, but she's one of those flirty types.
Yeah.
Who is like, you know, oh, I have guy friends. And she even says, are you worried that I have guy friends? And like, it becomes a little more clear as the story goes on. There might be something going on between her and Mike.
I think the question there comes to, was there something going on when Lance thought there was something going on? Or did something start when Lance started going off the deep end? Did something develop, or was it Lance's insecurity, or was it just the fact that she was kind of flirty and Mike thought she was interested in him?
Well, I got the opinion that she was hanging on to Mike as soon as he started showing some success. Because he's all the things Lance is not. He's popular, he's talented,
athletic,
handsome, and all that thing.
But I don't buy that. I don't buy that she's a glory digger, because why in the hell would she be attracted to Lance? He's older than her. He is quiet and mousy. He is unsuccessful. He's divorced.
With a teenage douchebag kid, which she probably would have known because she's a teacher there.
Yeah.
I'm making the assumption that teachers talk to other teachers and they know which kids are dickheads.
It's true.
Confirm or deny.
I think she honestly felt for Lance, but liked hanging around Mike because he was fun and charming, and he demonstrated that when he's talking about his article.
Right, and I think she thought they were legitimately friends. I think Mike may have thought there was more there.
Bingo.
I think Lance thought there was more there because Mike thought there was more there, and he was giving her looks. So there was this weird...
Well, yeah, triangle going
triangle right. around her that she was... I'm going to say she was oblivious to, at least at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was my take on it.
But towards the end, it becomes more obvious that I got the vibe off at the end that she was just hanging on to him because he was successful.
See, I didn't get that because, you know, when she's saying, fuck me, fuck me, fuck me, I think that's truth right there. That's not that's not lies.
And he was unsuccessful at that time.
Yep.
And Mike was successful at that time. He already had his article in the New Yorker.
That kids wanted to be in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Kids that liked interacting with him besides just the required interaction in class. And he showed he had an interest in the kids' lives. Yeah, I'll see you at football. I'll see you there. It lays it out pretty straightforward, but things radically change when goddamn Lance walks in on his kid, and that scene was painful.
Oh, yeah.
It was.
That was the shocker right there. We go along, we know how this is going to end up, but boom, when it hits his full face.
I had no clue. The first time I watched the movie, I didn't know that this was coming.
I got it spoiled for me.
I didn't have it spoiled for me. So it was one of those things that I was watching the movie and kind of, I watched this movie months ago, so I wasn't watching it for the podcast. I was doing something else, you know, probably playing a game on my computer or something, kind of half watching it, and it's like, oh, great, he's going to walk on his kid again. Whoa. This is different.
What just happened?
This movie just got different. And my first thought was, okay, this is why this movie has this name. Because at that moment, I'm watching this, and this kid is such a dickhead. And such a complete waste of human space that he walks in. And if he would have just let it go and called the police, everybody would have just kind of said, yeah, that happened. No, I don't think anybody would have really been shocked by it, about how he died. I think it was just a really interesting take on the idea that he was just being a good dad.
Mm-hmm.
In that moment, his whole motivation was just being a good dad. And this was because he knows he's been a failure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He knows that there's no way he can fail any worse. His son is dead. There's no greater failure.
But here's where I am gross. And here I think it's where he really proves himself as a parent.
Yes, and I think this is where he's got his last. This is his one chance to
do right,
to give his son a legacy that is not just the kid who died jerking off.
Yep.
And I thought that was just really cool that he put himself through all of that to get him redressed, to actually hang him in the closet.
And then sit down and write
a suicide note and put it in his pocket. And when he puts that note in his pocket and kisses his forehead, I was like, wow. It was like, I didn't get choked up, but it was close. It was like, that was a powerful moment.
Yeah, wow, that is really real right there.
Yeah, and it was like, I can totally buy all of this. I mean, I didn't quite buy the kid being just that level of douchebag, but I bought, from the time he walked in finding his son dead until he put that note in his pocket, kissed his forehead, I was like, man, that whole sequence was brilliant. I really dug that. Acting-wise, the cinematography, everything, it was just...
Yeah, for perfect. Someone to come in and see such horror and then suddenly, you know, have a complete breakdown and then suddenly reconstitute themselves enough forethought, okay, how am I going to salvage this situation? And then come up with all of that within the few, let's say, hours or two that he had.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he came up with this plan, executed it well, and was able to keep his shit together long enough to get through it in one piece, and then call the cops, and in his own way, just be numb for a while.
And not only that, but in the course of this, he found out that the kid had taken upskirts of his girlfriend at dinner earlier that evening.
Mm-hmm. Which is, in fact, what he died whacking it to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, I mean, just for him to still continue to go through with it. It was just.
This is where they set up the groundwork, and I'm like, oh. And this is where, oh, the movie's going to be so good. And this is where it continues the steady climb until the giant turd that ends the movie. So he. Somehow, and they never say how, the suicide note gets published.
Oh, they did.
They did say how. They said that the police. Somebody found it because of
they hacked the police records and found the suicide note.
Yeah, yeah. They kind of did a hand wavy thing and said somebody found it. Computers hacking information. Here it is.
Yeah, there was some hand waving going on.
Yeah, there was a bit of hand waving during that. That didn't bug me too much. But, so that was, I mean, so they get the suicide note out. And then that sequence where he's walking through the halls after the suicide note's out and he sees everybody reading it, that was creepy and cool, where, like, all the kids were seeing how quote-unquote Kyle thought of them and how they felt, like, a communion with him, and I don't know. I just thought that whole sequence was really cool and creepy.
Yes, how their opinion is slowly massaged back into, oh, he was so deep.
Yeah, yeah.
I did not realize that underneath there was this suffering artist,
this poet,
this suffering man who just couldn't get it out of him and reacted to the world.
Mm-hmm. See, that cracked me up when it's going around the students as they read the note and it shows the silhouette imaginary version of what they saw him as. And you see him with the beret,
yes,
and the long goatee in the black shirt.
Yes.
What is this?
Yeah.
It really the goth chick was hilarious.
She was great. Her arc was fantastic because hers was the one that you could really just, you could see that she just was kind of getting off on it. You know? That she was just almost falling in love with this imaginary image of what Kyle was.
Falling in love with a dead guy.
Yeah.
How goth is that?
No, yes, kidding. That's the whole reason.
And what was most interesting about it was looking at it as how everyone's idea of who Kyle was and what he was changing, to see Lance's idea of Kyle change at the end too, when he walks up and he looks up and he sees the image of Kyle hanging in the closet dead, look up at him and say, I love you, Dad. And it was like, wow, he's cracked.
Well, yeah, he's like, his, you said, thanks, Dad, grief, for making me popular.
Yeah, his grief has has broken something in him. He's losing track of reality. His reality has changed.
Mm-hmm. And then he takes the next big step. He writes the book.
Oh yeah. See, this is where it started to stretch for me.
Well, it stretched, but you know, it's kind of in the mentality is, okay, I've pulled this off. Now, how far can I take this? I mean, I've made him into something bigger than what he was. Now, can I just complete the whole thing and salvage my own self at the same time?
Well, and what he's doing is he's finally getting recognition for his talent.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's saying, wow, Kyle was a great writer. We didn't know he had it in him. This is fantastic. Does he have anything else? And that's where he writes the book over a weekend. And
yeah.
Being stoned.
Yeah.
Yeah, baked for a portion of it.
Well, that would have to be so, because he has to get into the mind of him. So what better way, you know, to do it than to get half whacked and then pour it all out, because that's what it's going to look like, you know, for a teenager who's in this mindset is going to be like. It's not going to make much coherent sense.
Right, and what's interesting, because I took a class in grieving in college, and it was like the study of grief, and he does... What he does is so interesting, because he takes little steps... That the first little step you understand, and that is preserving his legacy. Mm-hmm. You know, by restaging the death and writing the note, and the note comes out, and it's like, well, his legacy is now different. But he gets tied up in that. Okay, now I've created this new legacy for him.
Perpetuate the myth.
I have to keep it going. I have to keep Kyle alive now. This is the only way I can keep Kyle alive is by perpetuating this myth that he was a deep and soulful poet.
And fooling yourself by saying, okay, maybe I can make this into something good.
Right. And it's his own twisted... I mean, a sane, non-grieving person is looking at this going, man, that dude is whack. That dude is just
something
messed
is broken.
Up. But to a grieving person, I mean, everybody reacts differently to grief. So I think what he does is a legitimate response to grief. So to say that it's something that's quote unquote wrong to do, or it's wrong that he would have done it, I don't believe that. I think that, yeah, this character, this wishy-washy guy who just wanted to be noticed, I don't think he's doing it because he wants to be noticed. I think he's doing it because he is being noticed, but that he believes that he's perpetuating the legacy of his son.
And deluding himself into thinking, well, this is something I'm doing for other people.
Well, and that all of these disparate people who had nothing in common, who didn't like each other in some cases, were now all creating this community around his son, and that, hey, this is a good thing. This is, you know, this is like when people...
Well, that's the self-delusion.
That's his self-delusion of grief. He's going through the same mentality of someone who... You know, like the people who created MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, we're going to create a community around this to help other people so that maybe this doesn't happen to other people's kids. And so he's trying to... He almost seems to be perpetuating this as a way to help people, but he is so far down the rabbit hole that he doesn't see that it's all about him.
He's trying to do well while doing good.
See, the thing is, I think that he starts to see that this little lie that he wrote is helping people.
Mm-hmm.
That he sees that people are garnering some type of hope, some type of benefit, some type of inspiration from this tragedy in his life. And he thinks, okay, if I can do more good by perpetuating this lie, and I feel good about, you know, it makes me feel good, because I'm getting recognition, even if... And when he's on the Dr. Dana show, the quote that she picks is perfect. It's a perfect example of how he's feeling. And this is where I think it backs it up, because the lie is helping more people than it's hurting.
Mm-hmm.
and he is able to get what he has always wanted, recognition for his son, and through his son, him.
Yeah.
And the thing is, he is using a lie to give his son's life merit. Because hey, honestly, what the hell was his son going to contribute?
True. Hey, Sam, fuck you for just saying what I said better.
Yeah, well. I'm sorry. It's the vodka. It's the vodka.
Yep.
No, so, yeah, and I think that's where everything kind of comes to a head. And he starts to see, it almost seems like he starts to see that there are problems with this. I think he starts to have a little bit of doubt at that point.
But the doubt comes from Mike the teacher and Andrew starting to kind of see the cracks.
Yeah, Andrew.
Mike is looking at the autopsy. Andrew comes and talks to him and says, you know, I don't understand. He always seemed kind of dumb. And his dad plays it off. And you listen to him and you believe it because he's his dad. Who knows Kyle better than his dad? Especially, everything that he explains about why Kyle never showed this to anyone is completely plausible. Completely plausible.
Yeah.
And as soon as, you know, you see Andrew and Mike talking to each other, and they're looking at Lance in a montage, you start to see his shame showing on the outside a little bit, and then he disguises it again as his general, just his general attitude of, you know, I'm Lance, I don't really do much.
Right.
And it starts to crack through, and you almost think, when the principal and Mike are on the golf course with Lance, that they're going to bust him. At least that's how I felt.
Yeah.
I thought that they were just going to drop the bomb and be like, are you going to come out with the truth? And then they drop the big bomb. Oh, by the way, we're going to name the library after your kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping that, you know, Andrew was going to be the one who was going to crack it open.
Yeah, to
and
pop
there was
it.
That interesting scene there when he was arguing with Lance about Kyle, and Andrew gets really close into kind of getting him to almost admit it, and then what's Lance do? Well, he comes out and just savages Andrew right then and there.
Yeah, he gets real aggressive and
well, he drops the atomic bomb on him too, just like, you know, just like Kyle would.
Mm-hmm.
The same abusive type insult.
But the thing is, it's not that he feels insulted about the way that Andrew is talking about his son. It's not that he's upset that he's being seen through.
No.
Or maybe he is, but the thing is, his choice is not to continue the lie. His choice is not to state that you don't understand, but he has to get petty.
Well, he has to shut him down quick.
Yeah, and he went for the throat.
Right,
I mean,
right then
he
and
really
there.
Did.
Yeah, and again, the same abusive behavior that Kyle would have used.
But the thing is, he had so steeped everyone else in mm-hmm. lies about Kyle. Oh, he loved Hornsby. Oh, he thought Emily Dickinson was awesome. He could have just made up another lie.
Mm-hmm.
But he chose to be petty in a panic.
Yeah. I think it's because he felt sorry for Andrew because he put up with Kyle.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was Kyle's only friend.
And he was Kyle's only friend, so he liked him because he was a friend of his douchebag son.
Well, yeah, he was the only one who showed up at the funeral.
Right.
But the thing is, he had characteristics. Andrew has characteristics that Lance wishes Kyle had.
Right.
Polite. To the point. You know, not offensive.
Right.
Maybe vegetarian, I don't know.
Yeah.
And then just, I'm a vegetarian. Yeah, yeah, I got that. I got it the first time you asked for some cheese pizza. Thank you. And so it kind of comes to a head with, okay, we're going to dedicate the library in his name. And this is where the movie fails, in my opinion.
All right, so why do you think it fails there?
Okay, so everything that Lance has done up to this point is to make some type of legacy for his son, because otherwise no one's going to remember him. It is to feed his own want for success and to give him the things he wants. A girlfriend, recognition for writing, recognition as a father. All these things he had been craving, because obviously his wife never shows up.
Nope.
So what does that say about him as a husband, him as a father, and him as a man? That does horrible things to one's self-esteem. And so when he got up in front of that group, I'm going, okay, don't trope out on me. Don't do the trope thing and confess and send this movie in a downward spiral. Don't do that. What he should have done is perpetuated the lie, and here's why. Tony, correct me if I'm wrong, because you're a parent, I'm not. It is your job as a parent for the first couple years of your child's life to shield them from pain, right? To protect them.
To protect
them. After a while, you have to let them experience it and slowly introduce them to the harsh realities of the world.
Yep.
He should have, since his son was gone, he did not have to worry about protecting him. He should have just taken it and lived with the lie, because that lie was helping more people than it hurt. The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one.
I agree with that sentiment. I think when it got to the point of all of those people believing the lie and getting so caught up in the lie, and I think Lance felt that he was losing the battle of keeping the lie hidden, and Andrew wasn't letting up. I don't think Andrew would have let up if he would have just tried to perpetuate the lie. I think it would have continued to go on farther. And if he wouldn't have done it at that point, then the lie would have been more damaging to more people than it would have been doing them good.
But then he alienates the only chance he has in this life of being a father figure, in sacrifice of his son's, in this case, make-believe but very helpful reputation. There is some sweet irony and tragedy in that, but no, he frickin' cracks and just spews his guts to everyone in the crowd.
Yeah, I think at that point, for me, it was more about that there was really only one person that he respected anymore, that he felt was worthy of the truth. And I don't think it was a matter of any of the people who believed the lie. I think it was all about Andrew, and that he wanted to gain some respect back from Andrew, because Andrew is so broken and in such a terrible place that he feels the need to help this kid, and the only way he can do that is by being honest about it and just taking that back. Because that's what he ends up doing in the end.
See, I can see that, because he sacrifices his own reputation to show Andrew what the right thing to do is.
Yeah.
You know,
and
I see
Andrew,
that.
And Andrew, I mean, he's got an alcoholic mother. His best friend's a complete asshole who then
dies on him,
you know, in a terrible way. And this kid is going there to try and be there for his friend's dad, and says, "Hey, you know, this seems like a weird situation, because I didn't know this guy that well, and now he's killed himself. I feel really bad because I didn't know him and he killed himself." And then he gets attacked for that, and attacked in a pretty harsh way,
which then only fuels his suspicion. Why would his dad do this? This is so out of character.
Right.
I get that, but I still stand by it is the parent's job to sacrifice for their child. And if he has to live with that lie so other people can benefit from his child's legacy, he should have. But he pussies out. And then he does some crazy stuff.
Well, he does go a little crazy.
Yeah, it's that whole
I think it's a purification metaphor,
well,
right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
That's pretty obvious.
Yeah, the whole thing though, that was a little too artsy. Right there. Yeah, that whole scene could have been dropped, and it wouldn't have hurt the movie. But I guess that was
for as much masturbation as there was in this movie. That scene was completely masturbatory.
Yes,
I mean it was just Bobcat Goldthwait jerking off all over the screen.
He's trying to maintain his indie cred. Well, I mean, these artsy, his art house credentials here.
It's suit coat off, pull up untucked shirt, strap a button, button's gone, flabby old man tits flopping around, and then it's go in, pool, diving board, pants down, then briefs down, because we needed that, and then up the diving board, and you're only wearing socks, which are a weird color, by the way.
Yeah.
Like blue into teal. And then dives in, ridiculously slow scene of him coming to the surface, and then underwater dong. Really? We needed dong. We needed a penis in this. The scene isn't supposed to be funny. This isn't Forgetting Sarah Marshall with that awesome / horrible slapping sound.
Flap, 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 flap.
But he does become a surrogate father figure to Andrew in the end. Is hanging out with the creepy neighbor lady who's a hoarder.
She's a nice old lady. She likes horror movies. And if you look through, if you watch the whole movie there, you see up on the posters on the wall are all these horror and sci-fi flicks.
Your dog is staring at me. What dog? Oh, God.
But that's the fun part now. We have three damaged individuals here that are all trying to make... If you look at it, it's kind of a strange little surrogate family.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And I think that's kind of the nice ending for it. That there is that happy ending for it. That just maybe someone will be salvaged out of this, and it's Andrew. Because, I mean, the old lady's a hoarder who likes horror movies and eating pot brownies, and well, Lance is pretty much just done.
Well, yeah, he's
unless
a,
he can
he's
sell
failed,
some books.
Yeah,
well, unless he can sell some books, he's. I don't see him getting too many teaching jobs anytime soon. But Andrew, I think Andrew now has kind of this. This, like you said, surrogate family that
Andrew can now look at this guy with some respect because he sat there and trashed everything to be truthful.
Yeah.
So at least now he's being at least truthful to Kyle's memory, at least to one person.
Right.
But the thing is, he hadn't shared the secret with anyone. Mm-hmm. How could he have just not shared it with Andrew and spilled his guts about why?
Yeah.
That would have been so powerful.
It would have been
in front of this kid who has no idea how to handle what the hell is going on.
Right. But
I think then you get to the difference of really teaching a lesson to a child and teaching a lesson by painful example. And that's what he's doing. He is being a father to Andrew where he never was to Kyle. He thought he wanted to be a father to Kyle, but he had failed Kyle so hard for so long that his, hey, buddy, let's watch a movie together. It's like, fuck you, old man.
I want to hang out with you. Okay. Well, let's go to a movie. Then we go look for a computer. I'm not buying you a computer. I just said look for a computer. God, did I say buy a computer? Okay, we'll go look at a computer. Next scene, bought a computer. What the hell?
Yeah, he's a terrible parent. There's no doubt about it. And for me, though, I think the point was more... that he was a good parent. He became a good parent. He lost his way, and then he was basically a surrogate father to Andrew. And that's the step we see of them taking that toward that. So I think you're wrong, Sam. That's what I'm saying.
I have to agree with Sam. This movie could have been ended a whole lot different way.
It could have been a whole lot different.
It could have been a totally different film about personal tragedy, but it wasn't.
I think
one of the reasons why they chose that artsy fartsy ending there.
Either way, I think the artsy fartsy part could have gone.
Well, the part where he makes the let's say the confessional part. I mean, that's it. Kind of harkens back to the old adage, you know, in the movie, the crime does not pay. We can't let him get away with this. Something has to happen. I kind of don't buy the whole thing. He would just suddenly confess to the whole thing at the last second.
Let's see. This is where like with conspiracies, right? Mm. If there's a conspiracy and one person knows this one dude didn't win the election, but this guy does a fantastic job in the role that he was elected to, and he helps a ton of people, and he does a fantastic job, and you find out, you know, in the aftermath that the guy who was supposed to have won was caught, like, raping donkeys on Marilyn Monroe's corpse, and you're like, wow, this guy's a slime ball. And then he pretends to be a charity that Sausage Fest is donating to at ArtCon this weekend. And then you're just like, wow, this guy's a massive douche tool. But you find out he should have won, and you know the truth. Do you go after that truth and expose it for the sake of democracy, for the sake of truth, for the sake of justice? Or do you let the guy who totally faked that he won the election, that totally rigged it, and did fantastic things that saved a bunch of people, had great benefits for a lot of people, but was a lie? I think you go with the guy who's a liar rather than the donkey raper. That's just me.
Yeah, well, that can come out much later in the confessional book.
That can come out in the Ken Starr report.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's also the point you have to look at that if this is really about preserving his son's legacy, at some point,
douchebaggery doesn't pay.
Well, awesome. Lance has to realize that this is not about his son anymore. Because all of these things that are being done, when Bruce Hornsby shows up to play the song, it's like, wow, this has gone too far. Because this is supposed to be about preserving Lance's memory, but this is no longer about Lance. Mm-hmm. The preserving of Lance's memory has been invalidated because these are not memories about Lance. These are things that people think they know about Lance, but it's got to be eating him up in a way because he knows the truth. Again, these are also the actions of a man who's grieving.
Yeah, but then you have him write a will, right? And this is where some of us are going to disagree. You have him write a will that is narrated out loud by Morgan Freeman, and it says, you know, listen, I tried to be a good father. I did, but I failed. I failed my son. And I believe that's why it led to him trying to feel something about himself and ended up dying with a tie around his neck, beating his dick to wet pussies. I lied about everything, every publication of my son's, but after seeing what it did for people, I believe I was justified. Damn me if you will, you know, some very properly dramatic finish, and then going off camera. And then if you want to be a real dick and piss people off, right as the credits start to roll, sound of a gunshot.
I don't know. I don't think that's what the point of the movie is, though. I think it's more about Lance learning what it is to be a father. Probably for the first time. And he learned it while he was, you know, covering up what happened with the death of his son. And yeah, his son's a loss at that point.
Yeah, but then he sucks as a dad with the ending I proposed, and then World's Greatest Dad is ironic.
And right? And I see right? World's Greatest Dad as literal. That it is actuality. That he would do that, that he would go through that for his son, and then to move on and help Andrew.
It completes the grief cycle, like mm-hmm. you were talking about earlier, right? But I don't know. I just don't buy that he would sell himself out in front of everybody.
All right, so I don't know that we're going to get any conclusion on this.
We're just going to argue.
And maybe that was the idea of the writer to begin with.
Yeah, and
dude, it's Bobcat. He did a movie about clowns,
drunken clowns.
Party clowns.
Yes,
I think what I think is interesting is that we went through World According to Garp. We went through
1 hour photo.
1 hour photo. And I think we've had just about as much discussion about this one movie as we had about those two movies.
Now you need to do Hook.
Oh, so I can rail on Julia Roberts some more.
No, I think we need to move on.
Now, but then you get Dustin Hoffman and a sweet mustache.
That's true. That is true.
And Bob Hoskins.
As Smee. That is great casting. That really is great casting.
And then you get, before he knew he would become it, the angst he would need to play Zuko, whatever the hell his name was that was Rufio.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you smelled him stepping in now.
Wow. I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah. He was totally a punk kid. And it's like, oh, yeah, you're going to need this. Same age, channel all that from, like, 1992. You are Zuko.
Wow. Go. That's awesome. I did not make that connection.
See, that's why you bring me on the show, Tony, for that fourth dimension.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. So, who is this movie for?
Not for the box office. Good God, this thing is a failure.
Failure? $200 million?
What?
Yeah, I think I looked in the thing. This thing grossed pretty well. And it still has fairly high ratings on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, it does, but it did not gross well at the box office.
Well, this was an indie movie. They generally don't. I mean, they have very limited releases.
Hang on a second. Let's look at some numbers here.
Please correct me if I'm wrong. Please do, because I'm relying on Wikipedia, and we all know how.
IMDb at their grosses.
Jesus Christ, what is wrong with this website?
I mean, for the limited release it had on the
That's not million.
Okay, it's 200,000.
It's 200,000.
Okay, excuse me.
I was right.
You're right. But this, again, this was not released in general release. This ran around the indie circuit in the film festival circuit.
To be fair, at its highest point, September 13th, 2009, it was on 30 screens.
Mm-hmm. I mean, most of it's...
And it made $33,000 on 30 screens. The week before that, it made $72,000 on 29 screens, which really, per screen average, is not bad. Mm-hmm. It's really not bad.
Right, so that's not a wide release. I mean, what if the studio had gotten behind this and put it on 1,000 or even more screens? I mean, the only place you're going to see it right now is on Netflix streaming or DVD.
It's on Stars.
Stars.
I think that's how I saw it the first time. But yeah, it's... I think this movie actually has probably done better now that it's out of
general
circulation, and it probably has made more on the contract to be shown on Stars and Netflix than it ever did.
Well, probably yeah, it's going to have a wider audience there.
But if this is the kind of movie that Bobcat is going to make, I'm all for him writing and directing more flicks.
I want some more Shakes the Clown. That's what I want.
Hey.
Some more cocaine-riddled party clowns. Telling guys that they're going to turn their dick into a balloon animal.
All right, so to hear the conclusion of mine and Sam's argument, show up at Archon.
Mm-hmm.
The drinking game rules are absurd.
We will drink it out.
You're going to win, dude. I'm cheap date. It's bad. You're going to be into the Ouzo, looking at me under the table. What are you doing down there? Sleeping?
I did buy a bottle of Ouzo.
Mm-hmm. You're like, Sam, take it in the ass.
And I do have some more candy cane shot glasses and some Rumple Mitts. So I might be eating a shot glass during Backseat Producers 200.
Oh, it's going to be so crunchy.
Yes, it happened before. It can happen.
So are there really 9 people that are going to be recording for BSP 200?
I think what we're going to do is we'll probably have spots at the table for 4. and we'll probably just rotate people in and out.
I was going to say, because 9 people on the mic at the same time, holy crap.
No, that would be insane. And I'm not bringing my... I don't think I'm going to bring my my killer mic, my big condenser mic. That would be bad, because it would just...
pick up every bit of
everything
noise.
Every bit of noise.
This is a small room with a lot of people. It's going to pick up all the ambience.
Everything.
Yeah. I think
we're just going to do... Even that down the hallway, too.
Yeah, I think we're just going to do directional mics. And Adam's got at least one cord, I think, that's like 30 foot long, which we could probably wrap around the room. I mean, the room's that small.
Yeah.
So,
what he planned to do was just run or just hand the mic to people for audience comments.
Yeah, just walk around and talk to people. So, but Stingray and I went through and we came up with the Fellowship of the Backseat.
I gotta hear this.
All right, so I'm trying to remember everything now. Well, because of the relationship. And and none of this will be in this episode. We'll save it all for 200. Actually, let's go ahead and wrap this up. So, all right. So, Sam, thanks for coming out.
Thank you for having me again.
Yep. We will see you in a couple of days.
What's that?
I said we'll see you in a couple of days.
Oh yeah, you will. In fact, Friday afternoon. So
like
less than 48 hours.
Yeah, 40-ish hours from now.
It's good. Some good stuff.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. And next episode will be Backseat Producers 200. After that, I think we were talking about Kurosawa films. I'm not sure. We need to have a little discussion. We'll figure out what we're talking about. Maybe we'll talk about it during Backseat Producers 200. Maybe when you hit 201, it'll just be a surprise.
Hi-oh.
Kaboom.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Laters.